Why is it that people fail the CTA exams? Nitin Ribeiro and I talk about this in this episode so that you can avoid the common mistakes. This will help you prepare properly for the exams, regardless of whether it's an awareness, advanced technical, or application paper. You're listening to episode 82 of the Tax Professionals Podcast, helping you to progress, develop, and improve your tax career.
Welcome to the Tax Professionals Podcast, the podcast dedicated to helping you improve your tax career. Here's your host, Jack Bonehill.
Hi everyone, and welcome to this episode. Why focus on the reasons that people fail? Nitin tells a personal story to explain why at the start of our chat. Plus, Nitin and I have already provided a lot of guidance on how to pass, what it is that students need to do, but there are many students that aren't listening to that advice and are failing as a result. So we are changing tact. We want you to relate to the mistakes. We want you to make the link between these mistakes and the things that you are doing. The hope is that you can see from us highlighting these, that these things that you are doing and that might or already have resulted in you failing a CTA exam. And of course, if you know that you're doing these things, we're hoping that this episode will help you to stop doing those things. I know this isn't foolproof, but me and Nitin both think this episode will really help the pool of people that aren't listening to the advice previously provided. It will of course help anyone sitting the exam, so don't be put off even if you think that you aren't making any of these mistakes. But it turns out that from one of the points Nitin made about mistakes, it was something that I was actually doing too, so all of us can be prone to these mistakes. In the episode, you'll hear us talk about flashcards and summaries. And if you would like samples of these, then please get in touch with me or Nitin. Our contact details are in the show notes for this episode at thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/TTPP82. Please also feel free to contact us if you're looking for some advice or guidance. It's usually Nitin that you'll speak to, as he gives a lot of 15-minute chats away for free. But we do both want to help you and other people to pass these exams. The show notes for this episode, thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/TTPP82, include rough timings for each section of this episode. And the show notes also include all the links mentioned throughout this episode. There's already a lot of podcast episodes on how to pass the ATT and CTA exams, including the computer-based exams, the CBEs. And there is a link to all of those episodes in the show notes. And there are links to free materials that you can download that will help you to pass the CTA exams, including the study phase checklist, the step-by-step guide on how to create a revision folder, and a summary of revision tips. I know that I've just mentioned a lot of resources and links, and so the easiest thing that you can do is just go to the show notes at thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/TTPP82 and take a look there and pick and choose the resources that you want to have. If, like me, you're interested in knowing what you're worth in terms of salary, then get in touch with James from the Tax Recruitment Company to benchmark what you're currently on. From his interaction with many different businesses and tax professionals, he has current knowledge of salary rates based on experience and specialism. Speaking with James could help you to negotiate a pay rise or determine it's time to find a new role. Contact details for James can be found in the show notes for this episode at thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/TTPP82, or you can book a call with him by heading on over to thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/salary chat. So get in touch with James to benchmark your salary or to discuss potentially available roles, particularly if you work in corporation tax, as he's currently recruiting for many roles in this area. Without further ado, let's get to the episode. I think by now, at least for people who have listened to the podcast, being taught by you, maybe seeing some of your LinkedIn posts, you've got a bit of a reputation, haven't you, for being like the blunt, to the point lecturer that sometimes says things that offends some of the students. Like, how is it that you got to that point? Why is it that you're like that, do you think? Where has it come from?
So basically, I failed my A-levels and I was retaking, and I retook them at Kingston College. And one particular day, I was in the library, which is quite rare for me. And as I was walking through, there was this stand with this article, and it caught my attention. And the article was about how to fail your A-levels. And I thought, really? Who would write such a thing? And I thought, let me have a quick read. And what was really shocking was there were these 10 key points on how to fail your A-levels. I was doing those 10 things. And it actually scared the living daylights out of me. I'm not going to lie. And I thought, gosh, whoever wrote this really understood me as a student. And I would say ever since then, I've never failed an exam again. I'm not super bright. I'm not super clever, but it was about changing attitude, changing technique, just a change in general approach to my academic studies. And I think ever since then, over time at BP, when you see really good students failing when they should be passing, you tend to become a little bit more tough and, when it's needed, a bit more bulletproof. Okay. And I've become that way. But yes, I'm blunt, but there's a lot of compassion and a lot of care to really help that student get through. So yeah, that's where it comes from, Jack.
Yeah. See, I've known you for like almost 4 years now, and I didn't know that until today.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the story.
Yeah. Which it obviously made a big difference for you then, actually having that one about like why do students fail instead. So it makes sense, doesn't it, for us to do this episode today, really, and hope that it has the same effect on some people that may have failed a CTA exam already, or maybe they're sitting their first one and they want to make sure that they don't fail, so that they, rather than talk about what you should do to pass, which is what we've done a lot already, right? We've got loads of episodes, loads of information out there about that. And as we both see, like, a lot of people don't necessarily listen to that, whatever reason that is. But hopefully we're thinking that if we can talk about why people fail instead, that can really be like an eye opener for people, and at least help you to know that those things happen. And then if you end up doing those things and fail, then at least you've got a good idea as to why, hopefully.
You see, Jack, I really think so. So I think that there's so much good advice out there that I think students get a little bit fatigued, because I think to pass an exam, there's only so many ways you can say it, right? Attitude, exam technique, all the stuff that we've said and other people have said. But I think this podcast will definitely have a different slant. And I think, yeah, it'll give a different perspective. But yeah, looking forward to it, mate.
You had a bit of a different idea to me, I think, before we started talking today, but you thought about like the different stages of like preparing for a CTA exam. And it sounds like you see like things happen in each of those stages that are like big no's, where you can tell that people are on the path to failing just by the things that they're doing. So shall we start with the prep stage, as you call it, where they're learning the material and starting to get familiar with all those things? What is it that you see there that leading them down a path to failing?
I think there's two things. So I think when a student starts their CTA studies, it comes down to the attitude. So there are some students that have been frightened by colleagues at work or friends that have sat the exam saying CTA is really hard. Yeah. So they already have this nervous energy that they bring to the session. And I think that's not great. Yeah. And I think for those kind of students, it's about reassuring them, look, you can do this. Because when they get the manuals, whether it's from Tolly's CAPTAN or BP, and they're huge. Yeah, let's not lie, those manuals are huge. Okay. And the first thing that a student will think is, I've got to know all of that. Jack, you and I know you don't. Yeah, you don't have to know every single page in that manual. Okay. So I think that's the first problem. Then you've got the other student, the complete opposite, who will think, I've passed all my exams first time. Okay, TA is going to be a breeze. I'm just going to do past papers and I'll be fine. Jack, you and I have seen this over the last 4 years. They're not fine. Yeah, so they get a bit too complacent. Okay, and so they're the ones that don't really focus on the detail that they need to. So that again presents a different problem. So already before they've even started studying, you know, they're on this trajectory to failing. Okay. Yeah. And so that's the first issue that I see.
So a lot of this, by the sounds of it, then is actually mindset. Yeah. And you've got the two extreme ends of the spectrum, by the sounds of it, those that are really scared and they feel like they need to know everything, and those that think they can just get away with like the bare minimum, which is question practice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose if you've got that mindset, your actions follow from it as well. So I suppose those in the first bucket that think they need to know everything spend so much time reading the material, trying to memorize the tax rules and what's on those pages, which we know is obviously useful to some extent, but that alone is not going to help you pass the exam.
Not at all.
And then on the flip side, then those that think it's easy and just do question practice, as just doing question practice doesn't mean that you understand the rules. It means you can remember one scenario maybe and what the answer was there, but then when something different comes up, you don't know how to change the application of the rules to that scenario, right?
And if I can just give a quick example, when I teach interest receivable on taxation on large corporates, when a UK company receives interest, there are four key things you need to write. But I will then show my students literally 5 different past paper questions. They've written those questions completely differently, but require the same answer. And that's why those that focus too much on the question practice don't really get the exposure they need. Yeah. So the question practice for CTA is quite limited until you've opened your eyes to the broader aspects of what's going on.
Yeah. Just on the prep stage, before we move off that then, because this is one thing that I've seen from students that I've spoken to, and I suppose people I've tutored as well, is a lot of people have a gist of the tax rules. But obviously when it comes to CTA, the gist isn't really enough, right? You don't need to know every last little bit of detail about every single rule, but if you just knew the gist of everything, that's not enough to pass, right? You need to have a deeper understanding than that. So at that prep stage, you need to make sure that you're not just... Well, gist is like the first step, right? You get the gist of everything. And then when it comes to the later stages, it's about adding that bit of detail, right? So that you have enough of a deep understanding to be able to answer the questions that come up.
Absolutely, Jack. And I think this is where students go wrong, is if we take a basic example of a trivial benefit. Yeah, a trivial benefit. Okay, there's an amount, there's a certain rule for directors and closed companies. Okay, and students have got to remember, yes, learn the rules. Of course, you need to know the rules. But also then you've also got to learn, how are you going to spot that in the exam? That's the bit the students aren't doing. Yeah, the issue spotting, the scenario spotting. And I remember a few years ago in OMB Advanced Technical, this student got 49% and was complaining that they should have passed. When I said, did you spot this trivial benefit? And the student said, no. And I said, had you done that at work, that would have been embarrassing for you. Yeah. And these people that mark the CTA exams are measuring you on competency.
Yeah. So there's like two things on that, right? Because the first thing is thinking there's potentially a trivial benefit there, which I suppose really in order to spot that there might be a trivial benefit, you need to know about the £50 limit, right? So if you see like a mini benefit that's less than £50 straight away, you need to be thinking potentially trivial benefit. So that's almost like your application. That's what you call application, right? And like joining that bridge between the technical and the scenario. But then the second part to that then is the trivial benefits rules. Like there's 4 conditions, I think, unless you're a close company. And then obviously each one of those conditions, actually there's nuances to them. So a lot of people, because I'm employment taxes, right? This is like my bag. But a lot of people will know, oh, well, if it's been given as like a reward, then that means that one of the conditions isn't met. But then they forget to know that the other side, which is if you're giving someone something as an incentive essentially for future performance, that's also caught too. So a lot of people get so fixed on like the reward elements of it, they forget about the incentive side a bit too. So it's making sure that they understand both parts of that condition.
I said this before, I make up clients. Just have a client that wants to reward his staff, have that technical empathy. Yeah. And think about if you're celebrating someone's birthday and you're just doing that, then the trivial benefit rules are fine. That's what it's designed for. Yeah. So what you've got to do is really pick at the question. Yeah. Once you know the rules and know how to test it, and that's what the examiner's going to do. Yeah. He's going to bring those nuances in. So learn the problems that go with it. When is the benefit going to be denied? Yeah. We spend so much time worrying about when the benefit's going to be met. Think about when it's going to be denied. Yeah. And that's going to help you, like EMI. In the May 2023 OMB AT exam, it was about the trading status potentially not being met. Yeah. So you've got to, everything you learn is a potential problem. Yeah. And that will help you apply, but students won't.
So it's not at that prep stage, you need to make sure you're not focusing too much on just the rules. You need to make sure that you've got that bridge that connects the technical to the real life scenarios as well.
Exactly. The minute you bring real life into your studies, this becomes more fun. You technically grow, you'll be able to read questions a lot better. Yeah. And you're not just stuck in the manuals and drowning.
Yeah, absolutely. In class then. So I think that was like the next days that you have in your mind. So I suppose it's part of the preparation, right? Attending the classes, but in class, what are the things that people do or don't do that you think leads them down the path to failing again?
I would say as a tutor, and I think the first thing for me, you get students turning up late. Yeah. If you miss 10 minutes in my session, you've missed an hour's of your own work. And I think some students just don't turn up on time. I think that general demeanor. I also think as well is when you're teaching, obviously our sessions are online live, but I do a lot of face-to-face teaching on other tax courses. And what you'll find is some students won't even make notes. They won't even make notes. They won't ask questions. They won't. And when we often ask students, like, do you get this? Are you 100% okay? They won't be willing to engage. So I think that's the big problem as well, where they think the mindset is about, I'll do this at home, I'll read it later, or I'm just going to practice questions. There's not this willingness to give me that 100% focus. And when you speak to retakers, Jack, they will often admit, I didn't really focus in class. I didn't really take on board what the tutor was saying. Okay. And you're thinking, this qualification is going to change your life. It's going to be the most amazing, one of the most amazing things you do in your career, getting this qualification. But yet they're not giving it that 100%. But then on the flip side, you've got another student who will just want to ask obscure questions. What if this? What if that? Yeah. And you think you're missing the point here. Yeah. Please ask clarification questions. They're really important. But those that just focus on the obscurities, you and I know, are worth 1 or 2 marks in the overall exam. Yes, so you see them struggling as well. Okay, and so I think in the classroom, let the tutor guide you, ask the tutor for help, ask the tutor for support. Okay, and that's where you need to be, that dedicated student. Otherwise, yeah, you're going to struggle. You're not going to hit the high marks that you need.
Yeah. I could be out of term saying this, but I feel like some people see, like, when they attend the face-to-face or online courses, because they're getting the time off work, essentially, right? So some people might be seeing it as a day off, which is such a shame if they're doing that. But I've definitely seen people that kind of see it like that. It's just a day out of the office and I can do normal work, so they take it easy. But as you've said, that's a massive mistake and a massive missed opportunity, because if you turn up to those courses and you don't engage, you don't ask questions, you're not thinking, you're not engaging your brain at all, then you've had like 7 hours of time, or however long it is, that you've just completely wasted, essentially. And you and I both know, when it comes to CTA exams, time is precious. You're like, every second matters, and you don't want to be wasting any of that time. You want to be fully utilizing every last second of it. And I just don't get it when people don't look at it that way, to be honest. Like, I find it baffling.
Yeah, and I know for a fact that when I teach and when Libby teaches, the way that we teach, our teaching styles are, and if any of my past students are listening to this podcast, well, you shouldn't be, but if you are, then we're like, I will always say, I'm not moving till you get this. Are you 100% happy? Yeah. And I think that's really important from a tutor as well, that yes, I'm firm. Yes, I'm strict, but I'm also compassionate. I know that all of these students, and I think one thing we've got to be mindful of here, Jack, on this podcast, that a lot of students have backstories. Yeah. There are issues at work. There are issues at home. I've had students who have recently suffered a bereavement, or there are family members going through health issues and trauma. And I've seen them. And I think that's where, if you are one of those people listening to this podcast, you will succeed. Things will fall into place. It takes time. And so we're mindful that certain people do have a backstory, and we need to be kind and compassionate there. But for a lot of the students that don't, okay, it's about really stepping up.
But just on your obscure questions point, you know, where you're saying some students are asking weird and wonderful questions for the small things. Like, we've said this loads now, but that was the type of students I was, to be fair. But I think I countered that by starting so early that I had the luxury of being able to try and figure out those things. But a lot of students, from what I see, start studying around 3 months before the exam. I was starting like 5.5 before the exam. I mean, on that note, though, do you feel like some students don't start studying early enough, and then that shoots them in the foot as well?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was teaching last night, and obviously, you know that we produce flashcards at BP for some of the papers. And I said, you've got to be doing 15, 20 minutes revision every day. I go, if you're not prepared to do 15 to 20 minutes revision every day, don't even turn up for the exam. How are you going to remember everything? Yeah. What's your strategy? What's your game plan? You need to do 15 to 20 minutes. If you can't do much during the working week, okay. And again, this is we're sidetracking a little bit, because there are some people that genuinely can't study Monday to Friday, Jack. Yeah. And we need to respect that. Then at least do 15, 20 minutes revision somewhere quiet, retain that knowledge, build up your watch outs. And then spend time on the weekends, yeah, doing the extra work that you need to do. But it is important that you have to start early, maybe not as early as you, okay? Because I think you are you an autumn, you're in this special category of students, and that's because you know what works for you. But for most students, it can be done within the time frame, okay? But you've got to have that dedicated commitment that this is how much you're going to do each day.
Yeah. Joe, you know it is for me though, actually. This is based on science as well. It's not, I don't think it would just work for me. It'd work for a lot of people, but a lot of people don't bother for whatever the reason is. But if you learn something over a longer period of time, you will remember it better and you'll understand it better. Whereas if you cram the same thing into 3 months, you need to spend more time in that 3 months to understand it and remember it than what you would if you spread it. That's why I always did it personally. And then it also took the pressure off, I suppose, well, because let's say, I don't know, I come home from work one day and I felt like I needed to revise, but I'd already started so early. I then had that luxury to be like, tonight's just not the night. Let's not push it. Let's just take tonight off and then come back at it tomorrow or in a few days or something. Which obviously when you start, say the 3 months before, you don't really have that luxury. You've got to have your foot on the pedal for the whole 3 months really, haven't you?
Yeah. And to be fair, I was really lucky when I did my CTA with PwC, but joined as Coopers and Lybrand, was that we were on this intense program. Yeah. So we were out of the office for blocks and blocks of time. So we had a lot of study time. Okay. But I agree with you that you still need to build the knowledge in your, whether you're, if you're doing a May exam, okay, your knowledge needs to be built up during February, during March, not in April. Yeah. Not April. If you're doing a November exam, your knowledge needs to be built up in August and September. And I think that's the key issue. We've spoken to a few have said, you know what, Nick, Jack, I'm taking 3 months, 3 weeks out in October. I'll get everything sorted. That's not going to work. It might work for the one who's a super genius. Okay. But for the majority of mere mortals like you and I, okay, it has to be over a period of time, as you say. So I think there's too much emphasis in the final 3 weeks. If it's on knowledge, I think you're going to struggle.
How dare you put me in that camp? What do you mean, near mortal?
Mate, yeah, I put autumn as the genius. If she's listening, but no, you are, but you listen, mate, you, autumn, yeah, we've seen a good few students who are just genuinely amazing. And yeah,
but jokes aside, to be fair, I do think I'm a mere mortal. Some people might think I'm not or whatever, but for me, it's always been effort. Really, yeah. That's what's carried me through it. It's just a huge amount of effort, probably like 2 times as much as many people out there for whatever reason. I'm just driven that way.
Me, but yeah. Same. Absolutely same. Yep.
I would say though, actually just on this point about like learning the tax knowledge like over a period of time, excuse the pun, but the most taxing thing or one of the most taxing things I studied anyway is learning something completely new and learning something new that's complicated, like the tax rules and whatever. That takes a lot out of you, like mentally, it drains you quite a lot. And if you try and do that over a short period of time, you're just going to use up your whole fuel canister like in your brain and you'll have nothing left. Whereas you do need to spread it to just make it viable.
Yeah, totally.
Number 4 then. So this is, I think you called it post-class. So I'm guessing that means it's still like the prep stage, but you've had the class sessions now and now it's over to the student to like touch up and learn the rest of the material that wasn't covered, etc. Is that what you mean by that point?
Yeah. So basically, I think, yes. So what I'm thinking about here is, so when my students finish their class session with me, there's certain things they need to be doing afterwards. So I tend to focus on go and learn the flashcards. So that's the minimum content they need to pass the exam. And I also, on the talk phase, because we do lots of past paper questions during the talk phase, that's my teaching style, is I want them to start reading questions, not doing them, not necessarily doing them, but reading them to be able to spot the issue, spot the scenario. And what I love about these students that do this, Jack, is when they get to revision, oh my God, they're hitting the high notes. Yeah. Whereas the student that hasn't done that, when it comes to revision, Jack, they are struggling. They're like, I don't know where to begin. I don't know where to start. And if you're one of those people that has previously suffered with that, where you're thinking, where on earth do I begin? That's because your approach during the taught stage was flawed. Yeah, you spent a lot of time learning the rules, which you need to, but you didn't do anything else. Okay, mm-hmm. Some advice I will give to anyone right now, whether you're a first time or a resitter, start reading questions. Get used to the way the questions are phrased. Yeah, and I'll say this time and time again, the most difficult thing about passing a CTA exam is reading the question. Yeah, and once you've mastered that technique, okay, you will pass. You will not fail. So, yeah, That's key for my students. And you know what? 9 times out of 10, the first timers won't listen, but the resitters do. Yeah. And so anyone doing this for the first time, take on board this advice. It will really help you.
Yeah. I think I've got a slightly unpopular and maybe even incorrect opinion on this, but like my view's always been, if you're a real technically strong student, then you will be able to spot those issues in the question. But I put a post on LinkedIn probably about 3-4 weeks ago now, where one person came back and was like, oh yeah, but don't forget about exam technique. And yeah, of course, exam technique is important, right? But from my experience, a lot of the students, I think, struggle because of lack of technical understanding. It sounds like, from the chat we had just before this, that you're somewhere in the middle, let's say. Like, where do you sit on that?
I think over the years, obviously, I've got a fair few followers on LinkedIn, and a lot of them are my past students. One of them who's a partner now, and he was a prize winner. He failed his APS exam twice. But he was technically amazing, Jack. Yeah. And another person who's a partner in another firm failed their advanced technical twice. And again, but they were technically amazing. So I see a different angle. So I think my view is, I think there's two parts to passing a CTA exam. I'm with you on the technical side. You need to have a good technical base. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you've then got to spot the issue. And I think that's where the ones who are super smart don't have an issue. They'll be fine. But the majority of students struggle to connect with the question. Yeah, they will learn, for example, Jack, very quickly, on capital allowances, if you buy something on hire purchase, you can only claim that allowance once it's brought into use. People forget that. Yeah. Why have they given me those two dates? It was purchased in this period. But, you know, I think sometimes it's that little bit of reading the technique and application that then lets them down.
Yeah. I mean, then, if I was to summarize that, it sounds like then you agree that the technical part is absolutely paramount. It is important.
100%.
But that people can fail for the reasons too, on top of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough.
I agree. You, for CTA, you don't have to be technically amazing. And I want to reassure people, we're not asking you to be technically the best, but have competency. Yeah, have competency that if you had a client in the firm, if you had a client meeting, that you could give the correct advice in a client in a meeting, that you do the same in that exam. That's what we're asking for.
Yeah, yeah. So I suppose in summary then, for that post-class stage then, what is it, the thing that you see people do or don't do that means they fail?
So post-class, I think they basically waste time rewriting their notes, and they just go hovering in the manuals. And I think that's the first problem. I think the second problem is, if they've learned a topic, they're then not looking at past paper questions during the talk phase to see how it's connected. Yeah. And I think that prevents them from then being able to apply their knowledge. Yeah. And I also think when it comes to calculations, you need to have what's called a computational game plan. Yeah. So for EMI share schemes, Jack, if there's a disqualifying event, okay, there is a separate computation if there's a disqualifying event and you exercise within 90 days or after. Yeah. There are two different calculations. And I think students need to be prepared for that. Yeah. But CTA, once you learn a pro forma, correct me if I'm wrong here, once you learn a pro forma, all you've got to do on the day is change the numbers. Yeah. And so you'll get some students saying, I need to practice this, but there aren't that many questions to practice. Yeah. It's not like an AT exam where you've got similar regurgitation. Yeah. And so a lot of students need to have faith in the pro formas. Okay. And be able to apply and adapt it on the day. And if they can just do that during the post study phase, then that's also going to technically give them that confidence.
Yeah, makes sense. Just a reminder, to benchmark your salary, find out what you're worth, or to discuss available tax rules, get in contact with James at the Tax Recruitment Company. His contact details can be found in the show notes for this episode at thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/TTPP82, or by heading on over to thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/salary chat, where you can book a call with him. If you're interested in samples of the flashcards, the summaries that Nitin and I have talked about in this episode, then please do get in contact with us. Contact details are in the show notes for this episode. And also in the show notes are links to all the free resources that I've talked about that will help you with the CTA exams and also all previous podcast episodes that are aimed at helping you to pass the ATT and CTA exams, which includes the CBEs as well.
Okay, so next phase then is revision. Ooh. What is it you see students do there or don't do
there that results in failing?
So revision for me, why students fail. And obviously I've had students attend my courses and some fail. Okay, I remember one particular year where Autumn was in my class and she got a prize with me on taxation of large corporates. And I had another student that scored 20%. Yeah, and they were both in the same sessions. And I say this a lot. And I would say, first of all, I think a lot of students come to revision technically unprepared. Now, you're probably thinking, well, Nick, how much preparation, how good do I need to be? So I want to put this into context. So when I set my students a 10-mark question, I tell them immediately that if you can get 2 to 3 marks out of 10 with me on revision, that's amazing. 2 to 3. On a 20-mark question, I'm looking at about 5. Okay, so I'm not expecting students to come in knowing everything. And what we then do on the revision phase is we try and we lift you. Yeah, we show you how to convert that 3 out of 10 to 8 out of 10. Or that 5 out of 20 to 17 out of 20. That's the role of a tutor. The way that I teach is very different, is that I don't set questions to time. I refuse to do that. I think that's a complete waste of time. What we do is I give students 10 minutes under exam pressure to read the question and spot the easy marks, okay, to try and boost their confidence so that we then focus on the complex areas. And what you'll find, Jack, is when I debrief the question, I will get 3/4 of the class picking up everything. Yeah, picking up most things. But you'll get a 1/4 of the students who are like, I got completely lost. I didn't know where to begin. Yeah. And they're the ones that struggle to adapt. Yeah. Because the reason being is on the talk phase, they didn't follow the advice of reading questions. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So they're literally being panicked. Yeah, completely full of anxiety, full of stress, okay, to try and get them over the line. And so they're allowing the exam question to completely intimidate them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're not reading line by line, Jack. Yeah, they're not reading sentence by sentence. Why are they giving me that date? They're not processing each bit of information. They're just literally whizzing through it. And that's the problem. It's that lack of attention, lack of detail. Yeah, and that's what's causing the issue.
Yeah. This is reminding me of something. We've never spoken about this before because it's from a book I'm reading right now. It's called Thinking Fast and Slow. I haven't finished it yet, but there's this concept in there of like having the 2 parts of your brain. They're calling it part one, which is like the intuitive side of your brain that just reacts quickly to things and glosses over information, but takes a bit in, enough to like get the gist of things. And then you've got like your side two of your brain, which is like the analytical, the deep thinking side. It sounds to me like those students, those 25% of students are in that phase where they're like thinking in their stage one of their brain, which is like all about just quickly reading the question, but not really like slowing down and processing and thinking about the information. Whereas when you're doing the CTA exams, you very much need to be in that second side of your brain the whole time, which is thinking deeply about it, right? Processing everything, being methodical, and suppose thinking about it more than just high level.
Yeah. And I think I want to also talk about another thing as well. If there's a 10-mark question, you'll often get the fail student fixated on getting 10 marks. Yeah. And so that stresses them out. They're going, I've got to get 10 marks here. And whereas I tell my students, look, you don't. Well, you need a minimum 5 to pass that question. Yeah. I'm not stop at 5. Okay. But when you then guide them through, it's amazing how suddenly that unhappy face or the anxiety turns into hope and confidence, because actually there are at least 4 or 5 easy marks here. But let's try and find the other ones. And I've always said to them, if there's something in there that you don't recognize or you can't do, just move on. You're not going to fail.
Mm.
And I think students need to recognize that you've got a buffer to get things wrong. Yeah. And I think the other reason why students fail, Jack, on the written questions, is students double write. Yeah. And what we mean by that is they won't jump in and apply to the scenario immediately. They will knowledge dump. Yeah. They will knowledge dump. And that's another problem. When it comes to written questions, okay, learn to have short, polite sentences. Yeah, look at the marking guide. Don't read the solutions. Look at the marking guide. It will clearly tell you where the marks were. You've got to convert those marking guide points into proper sentences. You will have more time to attempt all the questions and just go straight in for application. You're going to pass. And it's amazing how many students, especially the retakers that I teach, okay, are literally like, wow, this is a game changer. Yeah. And I think some students have it fixated in their heads that they have to write this long, detailed thesis of an answer for CTA, which you know is not required.
Yeah. Just can we go back like a few minutes? Because you mentioned about Autumn, who obviously got a prize. And then you had another student that got like 20 or so percent. Like, what was it that was different between those? I think, can you put your finger on what the difference was between both of them and why that low scoring student got the low score and why Autumn didn't?
I would say attitude. Yeah, Autumn had the eye of the tiger. Autumn had the focus. Yeah, like a lot of my students. Autumn was on a mission to be technically good. Yeah, she was one of these students like you. Okay, although we teach her, she would still check the manual briefly. Does that make sense? She would go in. Okay, and for her, it was her strength was her technical ability. And that's, you know, I've used this kind of example before. I mean, superheroes and Star Wars. And I think it's all about your choice of weapon. Does that make sense? Are you going to have the ultimate lightsaber or Thor's hammer? Okay, where you're going to win. For any student going into a tax exam, your weapon is your knowledge. Yeah. And Autumn spent so much time making sure her knowledge was spot on. In fact, she was probably like you, she knew too much. Okay. She knew too much, but she went in and she was ready. Yeah. Another student I'm going to mention, Glynis Leo, who passed taxation in large corporates recently. Again, she went in, her weapon was her knowledge. Okay. And that's what we're talking about here. Is students don't recognize that the more you learn, the more you can then spot in the exam, you're going to become better and better.
Yeah.
And also, I think Autumn embraced the qualification, whereas this student, I felt, saw CTA as a burden. Does that make sense? Yeah. And I think that's a big thing. Like for me, you and I, we wanted this qualification. Yeah. For me, it's the World Cup. Yeah. It was the biggest thing I was going to do in my life. Yeah, it consumed me. It's what I wanted. I just wanted this so bad. Yeah, for me. And you've got to have that passion. Yeah, you've got to love tax. You've got to enjoy what you do. And I think that takes out half the stress. And I think a lot of students do it on a whim, not really having the focus why they're doing it, don't realize the implications of having this qualification. And the minute you embrace it mentally, it's a game changer.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was obviously I wanted the qualification, but it wasn't really about that for me. I always saw CTA in particular as like the foundation for the rest of my career to really get technically good and know that part I didn't need to worry about particularly going forward because I'd already aced it type thing. But yeah. There's definitely a lot of students out there that just see it down there as like, oh, I'm now CTA, great. But I think that's also a real shame because you might have CTA in the end because you might have got, say, 52 or whatever in a few examples, which is obviously a path, which is great.
Yeah.
But have you really given yourself like the best start to your career if that's the attitude you've had just to scrape over the line?
Yeah, agreed. I agree. And I think this is one of the first few podcasts where we've actually talked about the mental side of things. Yeah, the attitude side of things. Yeah. And I go to the temple in Neasden. One of the things that one of the sadhus had said to me years and years ago when I was doing my A-levels, and it's something that stuck with me forever, is if you change your attitude, you change your life. Yeah. And that's so profound for me. Okay. And I see that with students. Yeah. I've seen it with students who have failed on a few occasions and have not given up and have come back and won the day.
Yeah.
And that's the proudest part of being a tutor. That's why you and I do this. Yeah. It's to try and inspire people. Don't give up, step up. You're going to be fine, but you've got to give a little bit more to this.
Yeah. The attitude thing is more important than I think a lot of people think, because if you've got the right attitude, the right actions will follow. If you've got the wrong attitude, the wrong actions will follow.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think people realize that actually as much as what they probably should.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. Like the student that I spoke to the other day, and I told you about this, who scored 36% in taxation on large corporates. And I was quite honest on my opinions on someone scoring 36%. And he got a little bit annoyed with me and said, but you don't know how hard I worked. And I said, look, it's not about working hard. The students have stopped got using this as an excuse. Yeah, we can all work hard. It doesn't mean we're effective. That's why you and I do this. Yeah, we want people to work hard, but in a structured way that they're going to reap the rewards. They're going to benefit from that effort.
Yeah.
My worry is that a lot of people are misguided or don't know, yeah, how to put that effort in, how to channel that energy. Lots of attitude, as you say.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the, and it's cliche really, but I am a big fan of the saying, work smarter, not harder.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean don't work hard, but it just means you make sure you work smart, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Works. It's true. Yeah. But it's only going to work for those people that are willing to listen, willing to change, are willing to acknowledge that what they're doing right now is wrong. There needs to be introspection on anyone listening to this podcast, first time or retaker. She thinking, yeah, Nit and Jack have got a point. And if you want to have a chat, reach out to us.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So past practice questions and question practice then. So we didn't talk about this before we started recording this today, but to me, that's like an integral part of passing. As we've already talked about, like just doing questions isn't enough to pass, but they're still forming an integral part of passing, right? What? When it comes to people doing past question practice and the likes, what is it you think they do or don't do when doing that results in them failing?
Okay. So the fail student for me, and I've seen this a lot over 23 years, is where they just want to quickly blitz a question. Yeah. So they'll look at a question very quickly. They'll then look at the answers at the back and they'll make a few little notes. And they're like, if this comes up in the exam, boom, I'll be fine. You and I know that doesn't work for CTA. That's the main problem. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Retakers who you've spoken to and who I've spoken to, one of the first things they'll say is, I finished the question bank. Yeah. I finished the question bank. Well, you still failed. Yeah. And I think that's the problem. If you're just going to blitz the question bank with the expectation of something similar coming up, you're going to struggle with the advanced technical papers and APS. Whereas what we want, what the student that passes does is they will read the question line by line. They'll look at whether it's explain or calculate. And what they will do is they'll learn to be diagnostic. Yeah. They'll learn to be diagnostic, Jack, where they'll literally focus on spotting the issues, then look at the solutions and build up their knowledge where they miss things. And so when they go into the exam, they know that they're not going to get the same question, but they're going to look for similar issues and problems that they'll be a lot more comfortable. Okay. And that's the big difference is in how you approach that past paper question.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's really critical for helping people get through. The watch outs are incredibly important because during the revision phase, a lot the fail student will get upset if they get things wrong. Okay. And that will affect their attitude and it will increase their anxiety. Whereas I encourage my students, look, the whole of October for the November sitting and the whole of April for the May sitting is your opportunity to make as many mistakes as possible. Because for every mistake you make, whether careless or knowledge gap, you're going to be technically that better off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so use that final 4 weeks to really test your ability, yeah, on how you can spot issues, what you do. And that's the big difference. Okay. And I know that, and I've had students contact me after the exam, Jack, saying, Nit, I think I passed that. And these are retakers that have previously failed. These are students that have recently failed, who have failed previous exams, have come out a lot more confident because their revision technique historically was flawed.
Yeah. So just going back to the past question practice then. So I think what you're saying is like the mistakes really are people thinking that just doing the question bank is going to guarantee a pass. Big no. And then also rushing, like the doing and the checking of the answer of those questions that they've practiced with. Because I think a lot of people who do just blitz through the question bank, like, I think they're very much focused on what I'm going to call the what. What is it I need to do to pass? Or I just need to do the past questions. But they're not really thinking like, well, why am I doing past questions? And the why is you're doing past questions to test your current knowledge, find the gaps and get better. That is why you're doing it. So it's not about rushing through them, as I think some students do. And then from some tutoring I've done, I saw one big mistake with one student that I think is probably one of the biggest differences between them passing and failing previously, is they would do the question, they would have a quick look at the answer and they'd be like, oh yeah, that means the same thing as what I've written, but didn't really think whether it did. So they might have used some terminology in their answer and the model answer used different terminology and they weren't sure whether they meant the same thing or not. So if you're looking at that model answer compared to yours and you're not sure whether they mean the same thing, you need to make sure that they either are or they're not and what's different about them. And I think that's what you mean by being diagnostic writer, then almost like extracting everything you can out of those questions. Because I think it's more about quality over quantity when it comes to question practice. There's no point doing them all and not really getting much out of them. Doing like half of them and getting like loads out of every single one, I would say, is probably better overall.
Yeah, agreed. Totally agreed. And I also think there's a few extra things as well, Jack. So I was on a conversation with other tuition providers. And one of the other things that we found out as well, why a lot of people fail CTA at the moment, is they're actually not comfortable with exam four. Some of us, can you believe it, Jack? Despite what you and I have posted on a previous podcast, there were quite a few students who went into that exam, not even test run exam four, not practiced on it, not used it, okay, and struggled.
That's okay? Just stupid though, isn't it? It's like doing your driving test without ever driving a car.
100%. And we were absolutely flabbergasted. Are you serious? And there's another one as well. I had one of my own students, you won't believe this, for taxation and large corporates, used the legislation. So highlights to give her reminders of various things to write. And there was a legislation issue in the exam, so they couldn't access it. Wasted an hour, literally, because there was this sole reliance on the legislation. So this student didn't revise 15, 20 minutes every day like we'd asked them to. Okay, thought, no, I'm just going to shortcut it by letting the legislation help me. What do you do? You know, how much more do you tell these people to do things properly? So there is this other issue, not being exam four compliant, over-reliance on the legislation, I think it's going to be an issue for quite a few students in the CTA as well.
On the legend, actually, because I'm a big fan of the legislation, don't you? We've talked about this a lot. It's one of the big reasons why I decided to make the tax research masterclass that I do, because I just saw so many people struggling to use it at work or not using it because they were just so scared of it or couldn't be bothered to learn it. But when it comes to the exam, I think we've got similar-ish views, but differing somewhat, because to me, the ledge is there as one, a fallback if you've forgotten something, and two, where there's something that's really nasty or really technical and hard to remember, and it's easily laid out in the legislation, you'll just go and look at it in the legislation instead. From employment tax anyway, there's a lot of exemptions out there where in the legislation, the conditions are very straightforward to follow and easy to follow. To me, it makes sense to, if it's really complicated as well, makes sense to obviously know it, but also then to be able to go and check it in the exam to make sure that you've remembered it correctly. Where are you nowadays with legislation? Do you still think students should use it? Do you think students shouldn't use it? Do you think it should be there as a fallback? Do they have a lot of reliance on it? Like, where are you currently sitting with the ledge?
I'm very pro-ledge, always have been. When it was an open book exam, that I think the legislation had minimal use because for the reasons we'd already covered in our previous podcasts, I'm old school. Give me a physical book any day. Okay. And it was brilliant. With these new closed book exams and being online as well, this is my official opinion. I would say for taxation of large corporates, and I've done a 2-hour highlighting session on that, I think there are certain things you want to go to the ledge to. Yeah, it's a waste of time learning the rules. Okay, give a quick example, demergers. Yeah, purchase of own shares. The conditions are in the ledge if you want them. Okay, and they're easily accessible. For owner-managed businesses, Libby will say there's minimal use on the ledge. Yeah, so I think it depends on the paper, whereas I think for individuals, advanced technical and human capital, I think a student would benefit from referring to the ledge quite a bit. Yeah, so it does depend on the paper that you're sitting. And if I'm being honest, in the May 2023 paper, Jack, yeah, there was minimal use on the legislation.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends on the sitting. It depends on the paper. But I do think students should be proficient in legislation, especially the admin. Yeah,
yeah.
I'm a massive fan. No one should be learning the theory side of the admin. It's in the ledge. Treat it like open book. Be smart with it. Know how to apply it. You're going to be fine. You've got to use it.
Just want to make sure that people understand what you mean when you say don't learn it, by the way. That doesn't mean you don't understand it, you don't know about it, but it means don't memorize it, right?
Yeah, don't learn the rules. Don't learn the percentages. Don't learn any of that. Yeah, you let the legislation guide you and prompt you. Okay, but you've got to be able to apply it. Okay,
yeah, absolutely.
So during the revision phase, what I would expect students to do is to be using their ledge during the revision phase on those admin-related questions or any other questions and applying it. Okay,
yeah.
Because and we're going to get a question off this. If you're going to ask Jack and I, well, if you're asked, is it Tollies or Kroner I? They both have pros and cons. They're both brilliant in certain areas. You need to buy the one that works for you and get the student version. Whatever, you don't get the full version, you need the student version for the exam.
Yeah. Just to finish off then, Nick. So would you say what we've talked about today is very much focused on the advanced technical papers as opposed to the APS papers, or does it equally apply to both?
It applies to both, Jack. Yeah. Yes. And we've done lots of podcasts on those papers and what you need to do specifically. But again, to pass an APS or AT, it comes down to your prep, your attitude at the beginning, how you then engage in class, what you do after class, and how you do revision. It's the same stuff. Yeah, and I think like we've said, get with the right attitude and approach, you're not going to fail. You won't fail.
Yeah. Hope you enjoyed this episode and the different perspective that me and Nitin have taken in this one to look at the reasons why people fail rather than talking about how to pass. And if you do relate to any of the mistakes that we've talked about, just get ahead now, stop doing them and change your approach so that you're doing the right thing, because time is so precious with these exams and you really don't want to be doing anything that you shouldn't be. The show notes for this episode can be accessed at thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/TTPP82. Within the show notes are Martin Nitin's contact details in case you want to get in contact for the flashcards and summaries to help you with the CTA exams. There's links to the other podcast episodes that are aimed at helping you to pass the ATT and CTA exams, including the CBEs. And there's also a bunch of free downloadable resources as well to help you pass the exams, which includes a study phase checklist. It includes a step-by-step guide to create your very own revision folder. And it also includes a revision tip sheet as well. If you enjoyed this episode, then why not head on over to thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/subscribe to sign up for email notifications. Those email notifications will let you know when each new episode is released. Episodes are bi-weekly and are released on Mondays. But if you sign up for the email notifications, you'll get reminded of that directly into your inbox each time a new episode goes live. And then if I've also got other useful things to share as well, then you'll also get those sent straight to you as well. But that's it for this episode. I hope you found the episode useful and have taken away some useful points to help you to progress, develop, and improve your tax career. Until next time.